What?
This is the best food I've ever eaten.
Okay. Oh, this is from Q magazine. That's what we need. Somebody please to be sending me a sound clip of Jean-Luc Picard saying, Q! ELO's 19... This is a list from... Tim Riley just handed this to me. From Q magazine, which is probably the best British magazine about music. I can feel that visa wearing off. ELO's 1970... ELO's 1976 single, Livin' Thing, has topped a Q magazine of uncool records it is okay to love. I don't even really know that I know that song all that well.
It's a living thing.
Thank you. It's so much clearer to me now. It was almost like I could hear it in stereophonic Q. What is, speaking of Q, wasn't that sound that Roger Waters was trying to sell in the late 70s, Q sound? Where it was like a geometric, where they programmed in the geometric dimensions of your skull into the recording process. Do you know what I'm talking about? The wall was supposedly in Q sound. Hmm. ELO may never be fashionable, but in terms of sheer aural elation, this betters more revered band's entire back catalog, says the magazine. Top 10 guilty... I'm not even going to bother to do these as top 5. Top 10 guilty pleasures also include More Than a Feeling by Boston. Hmm. Seven clubs, S Club 7's Don't Stop Movin', 10 CC's I'm Not in Love. All right. Well, I'll read this list later, but we're not going to count it down. It's pointless. It's 503-733. What?
Where's Bob Costantini calling from?
Washington, D.C.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Don't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. We'll pretend that we knew. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. We should just use ELO, because apparently that's the new hipness. Bob Costantini, CNN radio correspondent on the Hill. How are you, sir?
I'm on Capitol Hill.
Well, that's Washington.
Hello,
that's,
everyone.
That is Washington, D.C. This the West Wing music is still accurate.
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Recognize that laugh, Bob?
Oh, yeah. By the way, in case you hear the disembodied ghostly voice of Ed McCarthy in the background, we've decided that he has the best laugh of anybody we know, and so we have then isolated this and amplified. Wait. There you go.
Remember, I'm just a fill-in.
No, Bob. One mustn't think of oneself that way. Here's the thing. You're not a fill-in. It's that help me, somebody.
Bob, we ask for you all the time. It's just like we always tend to try and get you after you've already left.
Here's the thing is, and you should know this, Bob, and this is not us blowing sunshine anywhere. This is absolutely true, and everybody here can verify this, that we repeatedly ask to get you on the show, and we are blocked. We are talk blocked, one might even say, by Laura Caviezel, who often denies us the ability to talk to you. She says sometimes she will not book you on our program sometimes. So, I'm not speculating as to why that is. I don't know, maybe you owe her money or something.
Stop trying to start stuff with Laura.
I'm not trying to start something. I'm simply relaying the facts, which is that many times we try to book you, Bob, and that they decline to book you on our program. And that is the God's honest truth, my friend.
We'll see what Laura has to say.
Oh, let's not. There was someone.
Depends on what I'm doing, too.
Let's not stir up that pot again.
For sure.
Instead, let's talk about Cuban-born Senator Mel Martinez, who. There is sort of a zany mix of emotions happening in the news today, because one doesn't like to root for the death of a head of state, yet. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, that does sort of seem to be what's happening, sometimes tacitly and sometimes just very overtly, over this business of Castro. Because Mel Martinez, who's a senator in Florida, said, "My hope is that there will be an opportunity for voices of freedom to be heard in Cuba, and that this, meaning Fidel Castro's surgery, could begin a moment of transformation to a better for life. A better life for people." And so this is what's going on all over Florida, right, is there is now just this Castro death watch happening.
Well, that's for sure. And down in Little Havana in Miami, they were celebrating yesterday. I imagine that today they've tempered it just a bit amid the news that Fidel Castro is not apparently necessarily on his deathbed. It's unclear, of course, you know, when he might be able to return to power, if he does. But here on Capitol Hill, except for Senator Mel Martinez and some others, it seems that most people recognize the fact that Raul Castro, his brother, who has taken over for the time being, and who is supposed to be the successor to Fidel Castro once Castro dies, it's not going to make things all that much different. It's just, you know, it's this premature optimism, however you want to call it, at the prospect that, you know, Castro will die someday, of course.
Let me ask you this. There's two questions here, because this, in a strange way, does remind me of Frank Sinatra, where Frank Sinatra was alive, and then he was dead, and then he was alive but ailing, and then he was alive but up and joking with the nurses, and then he was dead, then we weren't sure, and then he really was dead. To what extent can we place any sort of, I mean, to what extent is there any sort of truth or reliability to these reports about Castro's health? I mean, how would we even really know?
Well, we aren't going to know, and if you ask even people here on Capitol Hill, and even the White House admits it, it doesn't really have any clearer idea as to what is the status of Fidel Castro than anybody in the press knows. We just know that he is out of commission, so to speak, but he's issued a statement saying that he's doing okay. I get the impression that people who were, you know, dancing about all this yesterday, who were gleeful about it yesterday, and that includes Senator Martinez, who, you know, had a dose of reality as well, but he was very pleased. He's a Cuban exile himself. His family fled Cuba. So, you know, the idea that they were just jumping the gun, if you will, and this has probably happened on a couple of occasions that I recall, that every time Castro has some sort of medical setback, the people who want more than anything else to have him out of power, decide that, let's look forward. Let's see what we can do. How do we promote democracy? It's going to be hard.
We're talking about the veracity of these reports. It does remind me of that great moment about 2 years ago when he tripped over the chair and fell off the stage in sort of a Bob Dole plunge to the floor. Those things are, you know, I will say the political and socio-economic conditions and conditions of freedom of their notwithstanding, I will say that when Fidel Castro does finally shuffle off his mortal coil, we will be poorer for it in many in a strange sort of comedic sense. And this is actually a good point. The newsman Tim Riley was asking this, is that if this happens and Castro dies, at any point, I mean, is it ever going to, will it stop this flow of Cubans coming to Florida? Will the Cubans in Florida, any chance that some of them would say, well, now we can go back? There's, you know, Castro's not there, we can head back now?
Well, even Martinez himself said yesterday that he wondered if he'd ever be able to go back to the small town where he was born and raised. It isn't likely, I mean, unless there is some opening of the society there, that we will see, some people will always want to leave Cuba, and a lot of people will want to stay. The interesting thing, I was on the phone yesterday with a Canadian radio station, and they were looking down on our reaction to Castro with a sort of twisted eye, because there are a lot of Canadians who vacation in Cuba during the winter. They reminded me, the tourism down there is relatively heavy as far as other countries are concerned. Canadians, Mexicans, that kind of thing. We will always more than likely continue to see people trying to get out of Cuba. Some people who just want to get out. Some people who have been put out by the communists.
Well, let me urge you right now just to disregard the opinions of our neighbors to the north, Bob. They don't. Canadian opinions are really
no reach there.
Really worth what you pay for them up there. You know what I mean? All right, Bob Costantini on the Hill. It is our pleasure to talk to you. We hope to do it again in the future, sir.
As always, a pleasure.
Thank you, Bob. There you go. Bob Costantini, ladies and gentlemen.
We'd have no television shows without Canadians.
It's true. We wouldn't be able to depict places, things that take place in America were not for Canada. In fact, what did they just film? Here's a true story. My sister lives in Canada. She is a godless Canadian now. She has dual citizenship, and she's married to a member of the Canadian military, and it's all kind of jokes there. But my sister lives in Victoria, and she lives actually right down the street from that castle that they use in X-Men 3. If you saw X-3, there's a castle there, and she lives right down the street from there. So apparently the whole place is just lousy with castles. Let's see. What do we have here? Rick, this email says, oh, this is about Q sound. See, don't you want to say Q all the time?
Oh, I loved Star Trek The Next Generation. That was my favorite.
Gene Luck Pickard here. This is from Todd the Corpse.
Come on.
Funny that you mentioned Q sound. He says, I have a CD on my desk. Who wants to guess what CD it is? Yes, Madonna's Justify My Love. This is programmed in Q sound. The little write-up on the disc says that Q sound, this is a quote now about Q sound, which I knew I wasn't making it up. Q sound was this sound that they were, it's sort of like Dolby, except they claimed in the late 70s and apparently all the way through the 80s that they would program, they would record CDs by programming into them somehow with a computer the dimensions of the human skull, which would supposedly make it so it was true wraparound sound when you listened to it. He says that Q-Sound provides the listener with a three-dimensional aspect from conventional sound systems. The only two albums ever produced in Q-Sound? The Immaculate Collection and The Soul Cages by Sting. Also Prince of Thieves starring Kevin Costner. All right, the more you know. Here's Tim Riley and so forth. Oh, wait, what time is it?
I don't know. What am I doing here? I was startled by that.
I'm sorry. You know what it is the talking to Bob Costantini made me think it was 12:30.
It's not that I'm not interested in providing you with the information.
I'm sorry. I just completely threw that to you. Scotty J style for
and
no
here
real
I am
reason.
Sitting here relaxing and enjoying the program. All of a sudden, I'm called upon to be a participant.
I'm sorry.
Well, what should we do here?
I don't know.
Remember.
I have no idea.
Remember, at the top of the show, we were talking about how we were going to talk about something later.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see.
Did you write it down? You said it was in your matrix.
Let me look here. We haven't talked about Last Night at Dante's, KGW.
KGW. Let's talk about that.
My Viso experience. Also,
we've all experienced your Viso experience all day.
You've experienced it vicariously.
And you have a live read coming up for them, so you can tell us all about it.
I'll just say this, that Viso, and this is, I guess it is a plug, but I mean, this is also true. It's a truism. And they all experience this, as I noted last hour at the department head meeting, because you... Here's the thing, and I don't mean to sound down on the beverage. It's fantastic. The problem with Viso, if there is a problem, is that, and I know that this sounds like I'm flacking here, and it's really not the case. It's just...
It works too well?
It works so well. It's not carbonated, which I like. You know, carbonated beverages are just sort of... It's like you're drinking battery acid sometimes, and you can't drink them. You know, you get the burping, and then it's all unpleasant. The thing about Viso is it's kind of like a Snapple-y beverage. I mean, I don't mind me saying that. It tastes like Snapple, which is good, but, you know, the thing about Snapple is...
Tons of sugar and calories.
It's just sugar and calories. It's empty.
All zeros for everything.
It's all zeros. It's vitamins, it's minerals, whatever. But the thing is, it tastes so good, and it's non-carbonated, which means it goes down real easy. It's like one of those syrupy drinks you give to girls at a frat house. You just crack up. And here's the thing about that Viso. If you notice the dimensions of the bottle are such, and you can tell this is how you know that they're thinking the right thing, and this is how you know what kind of beverage it is. The dimensions are such that it fits exactly in the water bottle holder of a bicycle. Because, you know, those are all a standard size. On a bicycle, the water bottle and the container, that's all a universal size. You can buy a bottle, you know, a water bottle thing for your bicycle anywhere, and they'll all mix and match. Viso fits right in there. So here's me last night, getting ready to go home. I was here late last night because we were Dante's, and then I came back up here. So I left here at like 11 o'clock last night. Stop in, I'm like, well, I'm going to be thirsty on the way home, and I haven't had my vitamin today. I'll have a Viso. So I duck into the refrigerator. Just put it on my bike, zzz, you know, pedal off down the street. It's like 25 minutes from here to Southeast. I get to about Clinton Street, like about the Clinton Street Theater, and there's a long hill there. And I'm kind of going up the hill. I'm like, so dehydrated. Viso. Must rehydrate with the power of Viso. I crack it, and I just drain the thing in like 40 seconds because it tastes fantastic. And did you ever do this where you drink something or... Like, maybe you thought you took the Tylenol that didn't have codeine in it or something, and then about 15 minutes later, you start to feel a sensation that lets you know that perhaps you picked the wrong bottle. And wrong is a relative statement here, because I'm sure if it was 7 in the morning, I'd be fine. But last night, around 11:10 on the way home, and you start to feel that, how many milligrams of caffeine? What did they say? It's equivalent to
300.
Yeah.
So three cups of coffee, 300 milligrams.
Yeah, so it's vitamins, minerals, and 300 milligrams of caffeine. Now there is Viso that doesn't have caffeine in it. There's caffeine free. I did not take that bottle. I took the bottle that has, I swear to God, a huge red triangle with an exclamation mark inside of it and like a warning. Don't screw with this stuff. Which I screwed with this stuff. And so I was up very late. But boy, was I energetic. Boy, was I getting stuff done. Answering email like a fiend at like 2:30 in the morning. So, and then, like an idiot, then I did the same thing this morning. That's what makes this so doubly stupid. It's not the beverage's fault. It really is me. It's all me here. You can hear
this is the third day in a row you've done this. You really think that since there's a huge... warning label on the side.
That's a big red triangle.
Says, Vizo contains the caffeine equivalent to 3 cups of coffee, right?
Yes. Yes, I know.
Can we stop talking about Vizo now?
I just got to finish
I just thought it was product placement.
It's not. I mean, it
wasn't an actual commercial.
Handily, it works as that, but it really is not.
Can we skip the live read?
No. No, we can't. Yeah, I'm sure they'd be happy with that. We're just not going to do them. Well, I'll finish the story in the live read. I'm just saying, boy, am I awake!
To be continued.
Yes. Hello! All right,
got
anyway.
A cliffhanger.
So, Tim, Rick was on KGW last night.
Babbling like a fool.
Yeah, and I brought, I carry around, because we just got those new stickers. There's a big one, and then, like, a little panel one on the side, you know,
yes,
it says 970.am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so Rick was on camera.
Let me find the audio.
And I got to tag him with it, so he went on the air wearing one of our stickers.
So, very good.
Yeah.
Oh, this is our good friend Dante, the cab driver. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon, Rick. How are you?
How can I help you, Dante?
Hey, I actually got three things that I wanted to touch on. The first...
Lucky me, yes. Okay, first?
...was I wanted to tell Sarah that Ani DeFranco is going to be playing at the Aladdin on the 15th.
And she's pregnant.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah, she's having a kid. How weird is that?
Well, that's a girl that could, that's a girl that could use some decaf. Talk about a girl that has too much caffeine.
What day was she? August 15th?
August 15th.
Cool, yes. Thank you.
The other thing that I wanted
She's twitchy.
On.
That's the thing about... I don't dislike her. And yeah, I admire her for doing it. If you don't know who Ani DeFranco is, she's sort of a folk punk
Last
thing.
Last time I saw
whatever.
Her, though, I was really disappointed. She was just uber political and...
That's kind of a thing. And, you know, and I could...
Because I love all... I know it sounds cliche. I love all of her older stuff, though, you know?
And it's cool that she... You know, it's cool that she's done it herself. You know? Yep. Well, that's the thing that Lara introduced me to, was Ani DeFranco.
Yeah.
But,
maybe
man...
Maybe it's all that Vizo she drinks.
That's a girl who needs some Ritalin. anyway, all right, so the first thing...
The other thing was...
Yes.
This is really important. I heard Bill O'Reilly... beat on Mr. Peter Carlin.
It's true.
It's true.
Now, this is, I was referencing Peter Carlin earlier. I'm noting that he is a real author.
An author.
Now, this is true. Now, I was just speaking to Peter Carlin this morning. Because we were supposed to get him on Monday. We actually bumped him because we ran out of time and I didn't want to squeeze him into like 2 minutes. And so we tried to get him on yesterday, but he couldn't because he was doing like 14 interviews. Today, I swear to God, I talked to him this morning. He's doing 19 phone interviews today. He's been up since 3 a.m. So he's not going to be joining us. He will be in the studio. Peter Carlin, TV critic from the Oregonian. He just wrote a book called Catch a Wave about Brian Wilson, which is doing very well. That's why he's doing all these interviews. He's going to be with us in the studio on Monday, talking about the book. And yes, he's going to talk about this because he took a tiny little shot at Bill O'Reilly, and man, apparently Bill O'Reilly just unloaded all over him.
No, he didn't even take a shot at Bill O'Reilly. It was barely anything, and O'Reilly just came down on him like a ton of something ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, I swear to God. And the last thing that I wanted to say was that there's a good reason that we haven't seen the baby slurry.
Yes.
The reason is the baby slurry is black, and she's Will Smith's baby, and that's the reason. We're not going to see the baby. She's black, and she's not Tom Cruise's baby.
Are you... What?
Okay, this is the assertion.
No, I want to know if there's something...
Let's be very clear here. Can we just get as one of our...
Is there
hold
a reason
on.
That you're saying this?
Just before you answer that question, Scotty, add to the list of things we need to get as a blanket. The views of whoever just spoke do not represent the views of the Rick Emerson Show, CBS Radio Management
Assigns.
Can you
do it as Mel Gibson?
No, dude.
The views of the goddamn last caller... only represent the views of Jews, not of anyone.
Views of the previous caller did not even represent those of the previous caller.
So that's we are not making that assertion. That is you who are making that. What now? Let me ask you.
That's the most interesting thing I've heard today.
Having said that, why are you from whence is this derived? From where is this assertion that the Cruise baby is black coming from?
Okay, well, here's
not that there's anything wrong with that. Owned?
No. But it is noted that that Will Smith and his missus have an arrangement, in quotes.
Oh, an understanding.
An understanding that they can, you know, do their thing.
You are, okay, hold on. Where is that? Okay, let's stop. Stop. Everyone, don't speak. Don't speak.
Thick black hair.
Don't speak.
We should break here.
Don't speak.
No, don't break here.
I'm stealing that from Stephanie Miller, who stole it from Bullets on Broadway, or Bullets Over Broadway. Okay. Let's stop here. First of all, A, you started this by saying, in your assertion, that the Cruise baby won't be seen because it is a black baby.
Mulatto.
That the baby...
You can't say that. Don't you watch Caribbean Enthusiasm?
That the baby is perhaps a Negro child, and that is why we will not see it. And then I said, how do you know that? And you then follow that up with another assertion, which is that Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith, in your assertion, have an open or understood relationship. So you've now said two things, by the way, which we are not saying to be true. These are simply your speculations. Now, where did you get that from?
Okay, I was listening to an interview with Will Smith about 6 to 9 months ago, wherein he was explaining his relationship and the fact that they have a...
Did he say that? Did Will Smith actually say that he and his wife have an open relationship?
It was either Will Smith or Will Rogers. I can't remember.
Okay, all right.
Sorry. All right, now we're done.
Okay, thank you. That's the end of that.
Let's break.
So I guess the baby is not un-Caucasian.
That was a lot. Un-Caucasian. Is that the new term?
Yes.
Un-Caucasian.
Something feels so wrong about that.
There is something wrong about that, but I can't figure out what. I got nothing.
Well, things were going along smoothly until about 15 seconds ago.
It would explain the black hair, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's 503-733-2970. Stay there. Back after this. It is a Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you, and so forth. And in just a moment, welcome CNN Radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Rodriguez says, Rick, where to find this excellent caffeinated drink? Damn it, man, where? I have here my... You can find a Viso at Zupan's New Seasons, Thriftways, Walgreens, Elephant Deli, which is great, which is right downtown here. And it says, as they say, many other fine neighborhood markets throughout Portland and Vancouver. There you go. All right, 503-733-2970. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. Live from Atlanta, CNN Radio correspondent, Ed McCarthy. Hello, sir.
Oh, perfect. I like this.
At a certain point...
How are you, Rick?
I'm fine. At a certain point, this just becomes an Escher painting, though, where it's just you laugh, and then we laugh at you, and then you laugh at us laughing at the recording of you laughing at yourself, and it just starts to fold in on itself a little bit. How is life down there, sir? How's life? You got another... You've got... Now, is this tropical storm, Chris, that's not heading towards you. It's not going to hit where you are.
It's going to probably end up in Florida, so they're probably going to get double their bet and send me down for that, and all the Castro protesters down in Miami, so they'll have two for one.
So you're going to have a fantastic time. We won't get to hear the story with you like Lisa Goddard, where you get to go. You wanted to go through the combat and kidnapping training, which I think she's apparently having to go through this week.
I've not gone through that yet. Not really looking forward to that, because I can't handle simple tasks, let alone run from Katusha rockets.
Fantastic. I was going to ask, when you look at the storm map or whatever, and you see that there's some huge, I don't know, there's some tropical event or some huge, you know, wet, angry, you know, wind thing heading towards you. Are you more excited or more fearful? I mean, do you look at that and go, yes, a big story to cover? Or do you look at that and go, damn, I'm going to be sent to Florida. I'm going to be lashed by the wind again.
Yeah, you don't get excited, but it's funny. You get, for some reason, I don't know what it is in my nature. I get really calm when this stuff is happening. I don't really get overwhelmed with it. But
you are the calm at the center of the hurricane, Ed McCarthy.
Yeah, you're nervous. You really are. Because, I mean, I was in one down in Louisiana, and I'm trying to think of the name of the darn thing, and I'm in a Holiday Inn Express, and all of a sudden, I'm on the first floor, and all of a sudden, the water is, like, pouring through the window. And
really?
I'm thinking, why am I doing this? You know?
Why am I here? Was that when you were working? Were you a CNN correspondent at that time?
Yeah. This was a couple of years ago.
Nothing says upper crust like staying at a Holiday Inn Express. So
nothing but the best, you know.
No, it's true. No, I believe CBS Radio's on that same plan, sir. I believe we use the same booking agent.
I get the miles or the points, you know.
It's true.
I get the priority points, so I'm okay.
Here's a weird question, and I only ask this because I was actually watching it with CNN TV News the other day, and they were talking about these people who fled the Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. And is it, I mean, It's a dumb question. I feel like I ought to know this, but where are they now? They're not still in Houston, are they? I mean, they're not still living in some ramshackle temporary housing in Texas somewhere, are they?
Well, some are, some aren't. I mean, some have tried to make their way back. A lot of them trying to make new lives somewhere else because they're waiting to find out, you know, what the building scheme is going to be down there.
Are there people... What percentage of people, in your estimation, to whatever degree you can comment on this, what percentage of the people who were dislocated by that hurricane are just never going to get back to where they were?
Probably more than 50%.
Damn, that's insane. Now, how many people do you think that what number of people does that represent?
Oh God, that's probably at least 500,000 at least.
All right, so then here is the follow-up and perhaps, uncomfortable question, which is if, you know, the number is 500,000, so we're saying that half of those people that were relocated or dislocated, you know, got kicked out of there, is that going to have, and it's a horrible thing to ask, but is that going to have a positive or negative impact on the economy there? Because you've got to figure that a number of those people were from a lower economic strata. So is it going to be better or worse for New Orleans that so many of those people are not there anymore?
Well, that's true. It's kind of like a roundabout situation because they have so many places down there trying to come back. They're still trying to get people to work down there because if they don't have any places to live, it's not worth their while. I mean, when I was down there for Mardi Gras, when we were, you know, checking out how Mardi Gras was going to be following Katrina, and they put on the big show for that, one girl told me, she said, you know, I've been commuting from Baton Rouge to New Orleans, to this restaurant, and she says, I just gave my notice. That's it. I can't do it anymore. It's just not economically viable to do this anymore.
All right. Well, what happened to all of those? I mean, did they have some pick this year? There was five or six storms of that strength that were going to be hitting down there. Is that still the estimate?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, we're talking about storms that possibly could be heading a little bit further north this year, but it sure looks like this one is going to skirt Cuba and probably, hit Miami, probably down that area, South Florida some way, and that's probably going to be on Sunday, maybe, or Monday. So
I think Cuba's getting all the excitement it can handle right now. I don't really know that they can handle a whole lot more news coming out of that place right now.
You know, the Fidel story, hurricane.
Did you see that guy, Mel Martinez, that senator from Florida, is openly rooting for Castro to die? Which, I mean, again, it's like I'm not a Cuban exile, so it's not my place to pass judgment. It is a little strange to see a United States senator openly salivating at the prospect of a head of state dying somewhere. So
that is the whole routine down there in South Florida. That's the way it is. They're just hoping for that.
If I were you, I would be investing all of my CNN radio paychecks in dead Fidel Castro clothing, and I would get right down there and open a kiosk somewhere, my friend.
Whoa, what a great idea.
I'm telling you, man. That's
freelancing on the side.
The hell with that 401k. Your money is in pandering to the Cuban death people down there, the Castro death folks. All right, thank you. Thank you.
All right, that's it, Rick. We'll think about it.
Thank you. Go out on a high note. There you go. Ed McCarthy. Thank you, sir. Ed McCarthy, CNN radio correspondent there in Atlanta.
I love that guy.
That guy's fantastic. It's not that I don't care about the people of New Orleans, but it doesn't really affect us as such. But, man, it doesn't. That guy's just fantastic.
Since we're going to be focusing on the storm watch a lot for two, maybe we should get to some news.
I was just thinking that.
Sure you were.
Let's go to the city desk, shall we?
From higher south, the bottom of the corridor, downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk News. BT Rather reporting. About 500 women banging pots and pans and swinging spoons around have seized the state-run television channel in Oaxaca, Mexico.
In where?
Oaxaca.
Is that to? Is that one of those?
Oaxaca, Mexico.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The ladies took control of...
With what? Spoons?
Pots and pans and spoons. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they took over a TV station, holding employees for about 6 hours before releasing them. It's unclear how long...
Demanding more episodes of She's the Sheriff or something?
Or telenovelas or whatever they call those things. The standoff is the latest by demonstrators who accuse their governor of rigging his election. That wouldn't happen here.
Oh, yeah. Get used to it. Yeah. You're really going to be able to change that.
Apparently, they're filing a criminal complaint saying they have $54 million worth of equipment there, and the ladies could be banging this stuff up.
Yeah, good luck with that.
So, they're all on strike. Meanwhile, it's time for Hick Watch.
All right, here's your Hick Watch. And then we have, in a moment, we'll get... See, here we go. Here they come flooding in more theories about Baby Story. It was not our allegation, by the way, that the baby was really Will Smith's. That was Don Davis. Here's your Hick Watch for Wednesday.
Dateline, Fort Payne, Alabama.
Fort Payne. You know a story's good when it comes from a place with Payne in the actual city name.
A Valley Head man has been arrested for walking naked along a highway waving an American flag. The DeKalb County Sheriff's Department arrested Gerald Lynn Kelly and charged him with public lewdness in connection with the incident. Apparently, the deputies were sent to Hammondville about 3 o'clock in the afternoon after receiving calls about two men walking nude along U.S. 11 just inside the town limits. James said Kelly, who was the alleged drunk, was wearing only a cowboy hat and boots. The other man, reportedly wearing the same attire as Kelly and carrying an American flag, could not be found. Reports show that Kelly and the other man had been at a party that got out of hand. He's been released on $1,500 bond, which is like...
That's a year's pay.
That's a lot of money down there.
You have to sell everything you own. There's really nowhere for me to go there because there's no visual aid except to say that I don't understand the thought process that leads to two rednecks being nude in cowboy boots and a hat, no pants, no underwear, tackle out, as they say, carrying a flag and walking down the road together.
Well, it's their version of going out at a Malibu restaurant or bar, apparently.
I suppose. Okay. I'm so hesitant to even answer these phones.
Oh, please do. It's a radio talk show.
That's true. Well, as always, Tim Riley, the power and clarity of your rationale transfixes me, and I must now... The following comments do not represent in any way the opinions, thoughts of CBS Radio, our successors, heirs, or assigns. Hello, sir. Hello, Mike. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. This is Mike from TriMet. I called you when it was 127 degrees.
Oh, yeah. Your bus was broken down. How was the rest of that day for you?
Magically, I got sick and went home.
Imagine that. And probably the heat has probably just killed off the sections of your brain in which that memory is stored. So you probably, it's all just a blur to you now.
All I knew is I woke up in my at home, and I don't know how I got there. And,
And Annie M., you were there? Okay.
I'm sticking to that story. Anyway, two things. I got some brand new TriMet t-shirts. Would you guys like one?
Would we ever? Tim?
Okay, well,
did they get us a discount?
What's no free. I love you guys.
No, I think she's asking if that gets her a discount on the bus. Let me ask you this. Just to completely, if you're more or less anonymous here. Let me ask you this. If do you guys, and I've always wondered this, and I don't really ride the bus, I usually bicycle, sometimes I will ride the bus, but let me ask you this, if you're a TriMet bus driver, is there a certain amount, sort of a reverse quota, is there a certain amount of people that you will let on the bus free every day if they just give you the hard luck story?
Yes, because you just don't have the time to sit there and listen to their hard luck stories.
I mean, I'm not suggesting that people do that, but I always wonder if it's up to the personal discretion of the driver or if there's a specific number of free...
We are fair advisors. We're not fair collectors.
Oh, well, there you go.
In our training, we are told that it is up to our own discretion on how we collect fares.
So you are empowered, as they say.
Yes, but... We also can get citizen complaints for collecting fares, which go on our record. So it's kind of pointless to collect fares.
They're stricter on the max.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, here's another question.
I have a question. Let me ask my question.
Okay, Sarah is actually vibrating in her chair to ask you this. Okay, go ahead.
I always wondered this. So if I'm taking there and I have exactly counted $1.65 and dump all this change into the thing, is there any way that you can tell how much change I'm putting in there? Or is it just the honor system?
Yeah, the machine's a calculator.
Oh, it counts. Right? Oh, I totally know. Because I put in $1.50 before.
There's a little display right there. It says how much you put in.
I put in not enough by accident sometimes, like $1.50 or $1.55, and the guy's like, 10 more cents, pal. And I'm like, oh, sorry. Here's the other thing I wonder.
Some drivers do, some drivers don't. It's just a matter of, if you're doing a 14 or some of those runs, you have so many people, you don't have the time to
Here's another question, since we're talking about all things max-oriented, the TriMet system. On the max, and maybe you can speak to this, maybe you cannot, but I know on the max line, and you drive a TriMet bus, but on the max line, there is that, and there's those great pictographs. So, like, if you don't speak English, you can't read, where it just shows there's the one indicating that you must keep your proof of fare, and it shows the sort of state official with the angry, like, government enforcer hat on, and then it shows, like, the scared citizen, like, holding up his pass. My question to you is this. Because the Max is very much on the honor system in that they sort of ask you to purchase a fare, and that they send inspectors on occasionally to check to see if you've got your proof of fare.
Beaverton Center.
And Tim in the past has suggested how people might avoid that. But my question to you is, if you don't have ID with you, what can they really do? They can't ticket you. I mean, I guess they can.
They don't have tickets. They have warnings.
If you don't have any ID, they'll call a transit officer, the fare inspectors. If they think you're lying to them, they'll call a transit officer who will come and compel you because you're committing a crime. You're committing theft by deception, or it's equal to running out of a restaurant without paying.
Again, I'm not suggesting that people do it, but I always just wonder how they enforce such a thing. But they'll take you
to jail.
Really? So is that true? They'll summon the man to come and take you in hand?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I'd like to see that happen.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good time.
So anyway, what size shirts do you guys wear? And then I'll give you my theory on baby Surrey.
Tim, what size shirt do you wear?
Medium, because they always shrink.
Yeah, that me too. Medium
these
for me.
These are pre-shrunk. They're 100% cut.
Are these like a unisex T-shirt?
Yeah.
Sarah, small?
Yeah, I don't need one because it'll be too big for me.
Small?
Sure.
Take one. Be polite.
Please.
You don't have to wear it.
Thank you.
All right. That medium, small.
Medium, small. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Now my theory on baby Surrey, since I have so much time to drive around and think about it.
Thank you.
You know what I really think it is?
I have no idea.
And nobody's broached this theory?
Oh,
that
God.
They're being good parents and they don't want to whore their kid out.
Oh, that's obviously not true.
No, because they were shopping around. They had shopped around.
No, it's just that they want privacy for their kid. And they're not like Britney Spears and all those other lowlifes. They don't want to whore their kids.
They are a lowlife, actually, because they didn't get offered enough money for their baby pictures, which is why they pulled it. They got offered $3 million.
Now, Sarah claims... Now, here's the thing here, Mike. This is not just crazy speculation. When it comes to gossip, Rick and Sarah really do their research. Sarah claims, and I believe her, that... Now, your story is they had put out a minimum price... And that no one met it.
No one would meet it.
That's what they put out in the tabloids to generate revenue for the tabloids. These people don't want their kid spread all over the newspaper.
So you think that even
because
the claim
so
that they...
subtle with their relationship.
And Tom Cruise seems like a shy, retiring type. You think that even...
Trying to change his image.
You think that even the claim that they put out a minimum bid, you think even that claim is created by the tabloids?
It's all created. I just think they're being good parents, and they don't want their kid being followed and whored out.
I do have to admit,
and people really need to get over this.
I do have to admit that this is a completely new theory. I think you are actually literally the first person, right or wrong, to suggest that they're good parents.
This is true.
So so that alone sets you apart, sir. You're the first person to suggest that.
So do you want your T-shirt sent to the station?
Yeah, you can send them, drop them off. We'll give you the 2.5 cent tour if you want. We're in the coin tower.
Okay.
That's all right. Thank you, sir. By the way, I should also tell you this, and I don't know if you guys run into this a lot. This is completely true, and if my wife's listening, she knows that she could attest to this. We have a neighbor across the street, sort of a Gladys Kravitz type, and it's the weirdest thing, but she is a TriMet groupie. And,
we have TriMet groupies everywhere.
Is that true? Because she's, okay, first of all, she's like 70.
We have to file restraining orders on some of these people because they will not leave us alone.
Now, is that really true?
They ride the bus from 5 in the morning till midnight, and they stalk certain drivers.
Oh, she constantly, let me just tell you this, she wears a TriMet shirt every single day. Now, she's not like a crazy cat lady. I mean, she does, she cleans herself and so forth. But, I mean, every day she wears a TriMet shirt. She owns a car but takes the bus everywhere she goes. I will see her sometimes. The bus will sometimes stop on our street because I think you get ahead of schedule and so you stop for a few minutes to catch up. She will go and just bend the ear of the poor driver endlessly. And every time you talk to her, she's going on about her favorite bus drivers.
Okay, you have to realize that... A lot of these, there's hundreds of these people around, thousands maybe. We're the only form of government or anybody on earth that has to listen to them because we can't get up and leave like everybody else.
Because you're chained to the seat in the road.
We're their social life. They have nobody else to talk to. Anybody else would close down, would walk away, we have to sit there. We can't do anything with them.
Oh, that's so unfortunate.
We have to listen to them.
I'm sorry for you, because she really is just a nonstop talk box. I mean, it's like...
I have it every day.
If I'm walking the dog and she's out there, I go the other way. All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, sir.
Yeah, well, we can't go the other way because they know where we're going.
All right. All right.
Unless you're a Max driver. They're hermetically sealed.
Oh, yeah, the Max drivers have got it lucky. They're in that tiny little box that nobody can...
because people will talk to them through the intercom that's on the bus.
Hello. Would you?
There's an intercom there, and they'll hit it, and they'll talk to them through the squawk box.
Hello. Does this look infected to you?
All right. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your pain, Mike. All right. We have to go, sir.
I'll drop the truth, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
There you go. There's Mike, the TriMet driver. All right, fantastic. You
I
know what it is?
I'll buy his theory for a second.
You know what that segment was just now?
Please don't
local,
say relatable.
Local, live, and relatable.
That's exactly what it was. In that order. Local, live, and very relatable to the people.
You don't get that from some satellite program out of New York City.
Not anymore. That's what sets us apart. All right, it's 503-733-2970.
We never closed the Hick Watch.
Oh, there's your Hick Watch.
Yeah, that's the end.
I guess the TriMet sort of counts. I've seen some of the people who are right there. Apparently that Mexican city is Oaxaca. That's what it is. Scotty's typing it phonetically on the screen. Oaxaca.
Well, so be it.
It's like that Teotihuacan. I never know how to pronounce anything down there. What is with those people and the way they spell things? I don't just mean...
Those are old Indian names.
Is that like Quetzalcoatl? Well, I guess that is.
Yeah,
that's
an Aztec
name.
Yeah.
I mean... I'm not saying that everything, it's not, and I don't mean that in a you people, like everybody has to be like, you know, English, and English is only difficult, but I'm saying that language just doesn't even, it is not even close to being phonetic, so this doesn't make any sense at all. Especially because you think that, because Spanish, you know, is such a phonetically easy language and friendly to use, and then some of them, it's like they're just, you know, zewazaneo, like they're just screwing with you. They're just spelling things just to see if they can louse you up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Jim Riley.
Well, a teddy bear that belonged to Elvis and worth $80,000 has been destroyed when a guard dog, which was supposed to protect it, went on a rampage.
Oh, that's great. I thought it was going to be another horrible Elvis thing sold for a lot of money, but instead, a priceless Elvis artifact destroyed by a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
The curator of the museum says it's a disaster. The scene is a horrific mess.
That's so great.
Teddy bear everywhere.
That makes me so happy.
And there are a good 100 other bears scattered all over the place. Apparently, they put these bears on the counter to get ready for the exhibition, and the dog jumped up and tore them all to bits.
Worth $80,000.
Mm-hmm.
Destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Irreplaceable. Fantastic.
Meanwhile, in an effort to keep monkeys out of the New Delhi subway, authorities have called one of the few animal experts who looks after monkeys. The decision to hire this fellow, a man who trains and controls langurs, which are a type of a furry type monkey, came after a monkey got into a metro car. He's being paid 6,900 rupees, which is $160 a year.
See, that Mike guy doesn't have much to complain about. There are no monkeys on the TriMet.
That's true too.
So it's not like packs of baboons kicking down the thing.
A monkey reportedly crawled through some pipes and ended up aboard a train scowling at passengers and jumping around a car.
Scowling at passengers. What is it about? Seriously, what is it now about monkeys and primates and so forth? And there's just something so great and weird and scary and creepy and wonderful mm-hmm. when they do those human-type behaviors. Scowling at passengers and brandishing a straight razor. Dennis Pitzenberger, hello, sir.
Hello, sir.
How can I help you?
Well, did you get my text message?
Well, here's the thing. You just sent me a photo of you somewhere, but, of course, the photo is so minuscule that I can't tell what it says.
I was at everybody's garden center. I told you I would go.
Oh, well, see, but I can't. The photo is so tiny that I can't really see anything. It's just your head. Your head, which is huge.
Heard, you know, you told me whether I was going to go or not. I heard you dragging Smokey through the mud about not going there because he was lost in the hallway.
I'm sorry. It's just that your head takes up about 90% of the camera frame here, right? You do have a sort of Fred Flintstone-ish kind of head. And so, no disrespect.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. No, well, thank you. See, now this is you have to wait until we are doing a live read, and then you have to call in and tell how they serviced your every gardening need.
Well, actually, they were really nice. I just thought I'd throw
actually,
that in.
Actually, they were really nice.
I'd go today.
Yeah, like that's some surprise.
Like you're all surprised. Actually, they were really nice. They were not at all the savages I expected.
I'm not used to this type of treatment.
I wasn't surprised. They were polite when I got there. I just wanted, you know, I'm a man of my word. I thought, you know, since you're nice enough to let me come on your show and I say I'm going to go to check out one of your sponsors, I thought I'd tell you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. this is just like when I come on the show. The only difference is I've, you know,
No, we appreciate the call, Dennis.
You need to be nicer to him.
I'm being really nice.
There's no waiting when you call.
No, I appreciate the call. Thank you, Dennis.
Bye.
Okay, there you go. That was sort of an unnerving cackle. Let's take a break, shall we?
Yeah.
Take a break, come back with more. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Stay there. The Rick Emerson Show continues next after this.